Welcome to WonderPod, episode 166. I have no idea why I keep slowing that down. I listen back, listen to it in playback, and I go, what the fuck were you doing? It's a Friday edition, Friday night. I kind of forgot to paste that. Yes, I forgot to cut and paste that into Facebook out of my head. I kind of forgot to mention that in the WonderPod Online Facebook that we were recording on Friday again. Oh, boy. Probably only made the super fan angry, and I already did that once this week, so who cares. Joining me this week, as always, is Glacinator.
Hello.
He promises less F-bombs this week.
I will be a pious little guy today.
I think I've got him all nervous because we're going to talk about that,
which is looking something, forward
which
to
is
it,
something
though.
I have to admit is fun.
I've never received hate mail before, so you know it's sort of special, you know, like in my heart, I think. Like, this is like a milestone in my life here, guys.
I guess it would
I'm glad special. I get to share it with all of you.
I guess it would be special for you. I'm so used to people telling me I'm a fucking asshole. It doesn't even register anymore. Also joining us this week, I'm going to start calling him second shitster of Canada, of the Order of Canada, because Pat's the first. It's John.
It's kind of funny. I actually was going to bring up as part of my usual first quip of the podcast whether it was going to be F-bomb Friday or not.
Well, let's
we've already counted two, so that's cool.
Let's get it.
Maybe it is.
Let's get into the before we do what we've been playing. We'll do one before and one after, just to make Glacinator sweat a little longer. Here's the thing: when I'm busy, I will come in here, like I was working in the shop most this week, welding and fabricating something for the ranch. And I will come in here for like 10 minutes and look at my email and look and see if there's anything important going on, check my Twitter really quick, and then I'll just go back out, right? Right back out in the shop, do my thing. And so I see an at reply to me, right? And I'm figuring it's like one of three people, including our super fan, Roger. And so, like, I don't know why I'm calling our super fan, probably because he's the only guy that actually listens to the show besides the can man. And John, just to make sure I didn't insert anything that made him look bad. So like, I'm like, oh, okay, what's up? And so I click on it and Roger's post to me was, you did do a spoiler cast for Man of Steel. You didn't label it as such. And I thought, oh fuck, the one guy that actually listens to the show, I've managed to piss him off. That was like my split second first reaction. Right. And then I thought about it. I'm like, wait a minute here. Something's not right about this. And so, like, I shoot a message in our Facebook chat between the three of us. I do something to piss Roger off? And I'm admitting this now, and it may screw me later because John will be aware of it. But I'm like, as bait, like, okay, what's going on here? Is anybody going to give up the goods, or am I going to be forced to stew in my own juices for a while? And so John tells me that, oh no, I was just giving him, I was just prodding him to give you shit. Well, funnily enough, the man in the van, also in the can, is very much the same way, and I am usually the target. So, friends and neighbors here in the U.S., let me tell you that those Canadians are really super nice, and they are, and that's because they give up the goods because it doesn't take long for them to feel bad. But they are really sneaky shitsters, both of them. And I don't mind being the target. I find it ultimately funny. But I do have to say, for like a split second, even me, I was like, oh shit, did we really piss Roger off? Did John not tell him? Like, yes, might be spoilers in this, and then there might not be.
Yes, we Canadians, we lie in wait for a ripe opportunity.
Yeah, you're like maple ninjas almost. Let's just call it that.
Maple. That's not bad.
I kind of like it.
Maple Ninjas? That sounds like the most awesome comic ever. I would totally read that.
Or something totally delicious. I'm not sure.
No, like they would all wear Mountie uniforms.
Now, see, you're going. I think you're going too far with that, though, because how do you be sneaky in a Mountie uniform?
It's hard.
It doesn't matter. They're Maple Ninjas. It doesn't matter. You don't question it.
Horses are not.
No, they're not.
I didn't say they had horses.
They have to be. They're Mounties. They're Mounted Police.
As someone who owns an
maybe they ride ninjas.
Horse ninjas.
Like, now that I would
trained horse ninjas.
No, I like what I'm taking it literally. It's Mounties riding ninjas. Maple ninjas. I kind of like that concept. I think that actually might be better for our video game. Maybe we need to do another video game. Maple Ninjas. Well, oh, come on. Have you seen some of the crap that goes for 99 cents on the iOS store? We could do it. Or Google Play. We could do far worse than Maple Ninjas. I mean, a little pixel dude in a fez sold how many copies? Come on. I do have to say, though, Glyce, I don't know if you've ever actually seen the full dress RCMP uniform up close. I have. And no, I wasn't being thrown in a jail cell at the time. I don't know why they were dressed in parade uniform, but they were one time when I was in Edmonton. You ain't sneaking up on nobody in that outfit. Horse or no horse?
It's just a horse and loafers that's sneaking around.
I bet those poor fuckers in the RCMP really get sick of American and other tourists wanting to know where their horse is at. You know, because, I mean, you've been to Canada, haven't you, Glaze?
Yeah, I've been to Vancouver and Niagara.
Yeah, see, I mean, for those of you that aren't aware, the RCMP pretty much look like cops. Yeah, I think of them as like state troopers here, or highway patrol is kind of what they remind me of from here in the U.S. So I don't think they've been mounted for a number of years now.
if you see a mounting on a horse, it is a rare sight.
It's kind of a, well, where I saw it and what I was how it was explained to me was, since it was summertime in Edmonton and I was near that really massive mall that they have there, John.
The West Edmonton Mall?
Sure, I think so. If mm-hmm. it's really massive, got like indoor water park and water shows and
yes, sir, that's it.
Okay, it was 95. I can't remember the fucking name of anything from that era. Partly due to drinking, partly due to time. But anyway, they were kind of doing the same thing as mounted horse cops do in like San Francisco. Part tourist attraction, part enforcement.
Yeah.
You know, which I'm always fascinated by mounted policemen, because I've worked with horses a lot, and it takes a special kind of horse to be able to put up with some of the shit those horses do that are being ridden on city streets. So that's what you need, and that's what you need in New Orleans, Glaze.
Well, we got police officers on horses down here during Mardi Gras.
Yeah, well, yeah, but that is for enforcement. Because even drunks aren't going to fuck with a horse. Well. Well, wait a minute.
I would take that back.
Yeah, I'm taking it back because I'm not going into specifics of why I'm taking it back. But two or three incidents just popped into my head that I either witnessed or was involved in. Let's get this to what we've been playing. I've steered the show horribly wrong. I'm going to do it again as soon as we're done with what we've been playing. John, since you've made a list and probably have checked it more than twice while I've babbled, what have you been playing this week?
Yeah, I've been playing, of course, Animal Crossing, but I shan't talk about that very much. At all. It's kind of par for the course. I did get my club, and I did get a shoe store and some badges, and, you know, it's Animal Crossing. It's still good. Played some more Tank 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 with Peter. It's still really arcadey, and he got me to buy a couple of more monster packs to fight giant monsters, mechanical bees and mechanical centipedes and a giant griffin. And it's pretty well the same fight. All three monster packs are pretty well the same fight over and over. Yeah, it's not much variety. I'm shocked that they're selling those individually as packs, because it's kind of a ripoff. But Peter loves it, so and it's fun. We kind of get excited when we win, which is a big deal for him. But the new games that I played today, I downloaded the new Mi Plaza games that came out for the 3DS. I think I mentioned this before on how built into the 3DS are these two games that you when you street pass with somebody and their Mi comes to visits your 3DS, so to speak, you get to play a game where you play this adventure, you know, kind of not an RPG really, I guess, but you know, kind of Final Fantasy style. Your visitor. Let's say it's Roger. We street pass every day. So Roger comes to my 3DS. He fights the demon, gets a few licks in, and leaves. And then his turn is over. Unless I have street pass with somebody else, I can't move on. So anyway, Nintendo came out with 4 new games for 3DS Street Pass that utilizes sort of the same mechanic, where a person who Street Pass gets a turn at the game, or supports you in some way. And so today I bought 4 games for $15. If you buy them individually, I think it's like $5 each. So I save $5 by buying all 4 at once. Because Peter gets very excited when Roger's me comes to visit every day, because he gets to play those things, and it's very simple, so he's a big fan. Now, the new games are a little more intricate. One is called Me Force, which is basically a shoot 'em up where I am like the commander of my ship, and whoever I street pass with, their little pod attaches to my ship as the gun. So if it's one person, I can put them on the front, I can put them on the back and diagonal, and shoot forwards or whatever direction I want them to be. But that's where they are is where they stay. You can actually revolve the gun around your ship using the L and R buttons. And so I played it once, and I failed because I put him on the back. So I had a gun in my caboose, and I didn't know how to switch it around at the time, and I ended up dying. But the second time I played it, it was perfect. We went right ahead. They gave me a second chance, because I guess it was my first time. I died right away, more or less. So I finished the level with his pod on the nose of the ship, and then I moved them around as I saw fit. It's a very basic shoot 'em up, and the more times you street pass and move ahead, and you don't really level. Well, you don't really level up, but you advance, and so it'll get tougher and tougher as we go. So that's pretty fun. The lamest of the games is one called Flower Town, where it's basically just you growing flowers. And you know, I know that's a little bit hypocritical, because I do play Animal Crossing, where a portion of that is growing flowers. But in this one, you know, every time someone comes and street passes, you know, you get a seed, you can grow a plant, it goes in, and you write it into your journal that it's there, and you water it, and the person comes and brings their plant, and you see what they've been growing. It's okay, but it's not very exciting. And you know, I don't think Peter's gonna find much longevity with that one, but you know, it's okay. The third one is one called Warrior's Way, where if someone street passes, they join your army. So you start off with like 250 soldiers, and they bring however many they have. I guess on the first street pass or level 1, they may have 100. Level 2, they have 200, and so forth. And so what happens is in the gameplay itself, you're trying to invade various countries. It kind of plays like Find Me 1 and 2. But you're kind of going. You got to conquer 20 countries in a row. So you go in and you bring your army. You divide them up into basically a rock paper scissors competition, where like say you have 100 soldiers. You can divide how many you want to, if you feel that your paper movement should be the strongest, because you can see that the person coming has a lot of rock in their, as far as their attacks are going to be, you want to be able to block that. So you might put more soldiers into paper and fewer into scissors and paper, into rock, sorry. And so you go into the battle and like you kind of face off with your, you kind of try to predict what they're going to play. So the first guy had rock, rock, rock as his 3 attacks, and it's the best 2 out of 3, which I didn't realize when I went into it. So you see his 3 potential attacks are rock, rock, rock. And so I put all my guys into paper thinking that I would be able to block him 3 times in a row, or 2 times in a row, or block him whatever attack he did. But as it turns out, once you use up 1 attack, you can't do it again, which is kind of weird. So that all I had left were like 5 soldiers in paper and or 5 soldiers in scissors and 5 guys in rock. And I ended up getting my ass handed to me in the next 2 turns. I guess we'll see how that goes. I'm sure I'll figure it out. It doesn't seem that complicated, but it's, cause it's rock, paper, scissors. And the final game of that is one called Monster Manor, which is probably the most intricate one, where, you go into this kind of haunted house to solve a mystery. And the way it's presented to you is that you go into a room. So let's say you have a floor in the shape of a keyhole, we'll say, and you're given a block in kind of like a Tetris-shaped block to lay it down. And when you lay it down, it creates a hallway. If you put the same colors next to each other, like a four square block and another four square block, that creates a large room. But if you put down a blue one next to that, there's a door between the two colors, and you go in. You may have to fight an enemy, or you may have to just move on to the next point. And so you get, for each street pass, so Roger's me comes in and gives me a new, you know, I find him in the house as someone who's in trouble. I fight a ghost. He gives me a piece and a block piece to put into the puzzle, and I can move forward. So, and the point of the whole blocks in the shape of in this empty space that's the shape of a keyhole, is that you're trying to find the staircase in that area as you add each block down. So you might find it right away. You might find it at the back of the room or to the left. You kind of have to kind of guess a little bit where it might be. I'm not sure if it'll give you clues where it is, but as you make the rooms and the hallways, you kind of advance around the room trying to find the stairs to go to the next floor. And so that seems like it's going to be a little bit more intricate, a little more details, and actually has somewhat of a story because you have a sidekick who kind of comes along and gives you information about the mystery in the building. So it's pretty cool. These are four games that are not going to take up a lot of time, but at least it'll make the street passing stuff a little more tolerable, a little more interesting for things to do. I'm talking a lot more than I thought I would, because my last game I'm going to talk about is the new Walking Dead DLC 400 Days. So the main game is over. They've had the five episodes. I finished that. So this 400 days kind of, I'm not sure if it's supposed to act as a bridge between episode one or session, I'm sorry, season one and what will be season two. It seems like that, the way it's presented. Because what happens is, and I won't go into any spoilers here, but at the very beginning of the game, you see basically a sign next to the deserted gas station that has pictures of people who are, you know, lost, and people have posted them up there to say, you know, my boyfriend is lost, his name is this, yada yada yada. So there's five pictures that become, you know, focused to you, and for each of the five pictures, you kind of get a brief backstory. So this episode is broken up into five pieces of short, you know. Again, backstory, how they got where they are, or what happened to them during the zombie apocalypse. So one person might be 300 days into the apocalypse. One person is 18. So, you know, it could be all over the place, but you get an idea of that character. So I won't talk about what happens in them, but I will say that in terms of the gameplay and the voice acting and even the script, it's somehow it's the voice acting's even better than it is in season one. Like you can. The way people talk is so fluid and natural, like it's quite something. Like it's really good in the main game as well, but it still feels like a game. In this one, it seems like people are actually talking, and even when you press the button to generate a response, it feels very natural. The way they respond and answer questions. So I don't know how long they've been working on this or whatever, or if this is just maybe it's just an evolution of The Walking Dead and where it's going to go for season two. But It's really good, you know. I really wish there was more of it so that you could kind of get into these characters even more deeply, because they're all very interesting and have different points of view and the decisions you make are really good as well. It doesn't really
How much is it?
It's $5.
$5. Okay.
Same as the other episodes. So that's that. You know, it's a good price. I mean, $5 for. I would say probably a couple of hours of gameplay. You know, it's not like 10 hours. It's probably like, you know, 1 hour or maybe two, depending on how you stretch it out, maybe, I guess. Yeah, it's very character-driven and maybe a little less action-y than the main game. But it's still basically a point-and-click adventure, for sure. But it's... You know, like the original main game, it did have a lot of action in it in places. This has some, so yeah, I really enjoyed it. It really, reminded me how good the main game was. So if you guys are into that Steam sale stuff, I noticed that the whole season is available for $6 on Steam. So that's pretty crazy and pretty great. So I definitely would pick that up and then try out the DLC after. And that's all I've been playing.
Mr. Gleisnader, why don't you tell us what you've been playing, and then I will update everybody on the Virtual Boy contest. I assume, John, you have not found it yet.
I have not, though I do have lots of Metroid clothing. I'm one shirt away from a full Varia suit. So, Glace, if you need some shoes, some Varia shoes, let me know.
I have everything but the shirt as well. So, both shirtless.
That's because the shirt's the rarest item of all.
I don't know. Not as rare as a Virtual Boy, it seems, for freak's sake.
Glacenator, have you found the Virtual Boy yet?
No, I haven't. And, I mean, this I'll keep this thing short because, I mean, I've been playing Animal Crossing. What a surprise. I mean, I'm sorry, but my what I've been playing are going to be very repetitive for the next 7 years of my life. No, but I mean, I honestly don't know how long I'll keep playing. We sort of talked about this last podcast about how long it'll be fresh, but I mean, I don't know if I did anything incredibly different this week that's worth talking about. The store, Tom Nook's store that his nephews run, I got upgraded to the supermarket. So that's exciting, I guess.
is that the one? That must be the one after the first upgrade. Is this the second or third?
Yeah, this is the second one. So yeah. I think it's the Nook and Go. I think that's what it's called.
Okay, yeah.
That sounds like a whorehouse.
Nook and Go. Oh, yeah.
Well,
That would be an awesome sexual position, a Nook. Do you want to do the Tom Nook?
Actually, here's the thing. He's not wrong. Because if there are sexual positions called the Rusty Trombone and the Cleveland Steamer, mind you, those are both very out there and kind of disturbing if you actually read what they are. Tom Nook kind of sounds like a sexual position, and one that is not horrifying or terrifying.
Yeah, doing a Tom Nook is when you have sex with a furry and then steal all their money afterwards. And that's what I've been playing, guys.
I'm not sure if I'm that broke. I'm not sure if I'm broke enough to have sex with a furry just to steal their money. I've pissed off furries before, so we're not conquering the ground. Okay, so here's the deal. Audience, neither of these guys have found the Virtual Boy. Well, a third contender may have arisen in this fracas, and that would be our super fan, Roger. John's like almost, you guys were really lucky or really close to me not seeing this because I didn't see him slip it in between the other John and him and I's banter back and forth. But I have a picture here of Mr. Roger. He really needs a nose job. His Animal Crossing guy does. The Virtual Boy.
He has a Wario nose and mustache.
Oh, that's what it is. He's wearing a Pikmin hat. That's Pikmin, right?
It is, yeah.
I never thought I'd see the day that a cross between Wario and Pikmin would make like the most creepy put the lotion in the basket serial killer kind of head possible, but Roger has done it.
Yeah, the green wetsuit doesn't help either.
No, it doesn't. You know what? Is this picture big enough? If this picture is big enough, it may become the banner for this week.
Oh, gosh.
The banner last week was just me. I just cut and paste a picture I took of a fire that a burn pile we were burning on the ranch and just slapped letters on it. Anyway, the point is that Mr. Roger has the Virtual Boy. So, what I'm thinking is, if you two can't get your hands on the Virtual Boy within the next 2 weeks, then the prize is going to Roger. And I'm really kind of putting the pressure on you, Glace, because John plays like all kinds of other games.
The pressure on me? Glace doesn't have to work with Roger.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I fucked you both. Okay, yeah, fair enough. That is true. That'll make you think twice about shit stirring next time. No, it won't. I know. Yeah, I know that chuckle, and I don't care. So that's the deal. Roger, I know you will be listening possibly Monday when you guys go back to work. I'm not sure you two work. That's the thing. I think your employer, I think I've got blackmail over you two for your employer because I'm pretty sure you don't do anything. I'm kidding. Just so we're all clear. So that's the deal. Let's see. Tonight is the 12th of July. You have until the 26th of July to acquire a Virtual Boy, or I'm giving the prize, the $10 free game on Steam to Roger.
The ultimatum is here.
Yeah.
Hey, Glaze, I got to ask you, in the new Nook store, how many fortune cookies do you get a day?
Still two.
Okay, so we're on even playing field at least. Okay.
Oh, and yes. By the way, I'll throw this wrinkle into it because then you can fight over who gets the game. Collaboration to screw Roger out of the prize is welcomed. See, so, I have nothing so to what, gain
so
here.
What you're saying is, if I bribe Roger with enough bells to get his Virtual Boy before he listens to the podcast, I should do that?
Oh, that's dirty.
I'll accept that.
It's freaking insider trading.
If you can convince Roger, it's really tempting to throw him that reply right now on Twitter. Going, don't sell John your Virtual Boy.
Hey, Roger, what's your friend code?
Here's the thing. I'm going to allow that because I know Roger's a pretty smart dude. I know you are as well, John, because you guys play with chemicals every day, and that shit terrifies me, so you're probably smart. Or you burn yourself a lot, one of the two. So I think he's going to smell a rat, even if I let you do that. I think he's going to know if something is up.
I'm too much of a Paragon player. I don't know if I'd
I was going to say, dirty. That's the other reason I'm going to allow it. I'm not sure that your internal battle over whether or not you could be that evil. I do know this much. Glacinator's not sleeping this weekend.
He's getting up at 6 a.m. to go to the store.
That's the thing, though. I can't like grind to get it. I have to wait. You know.
That is the other
every day.
See, all I'm gonna lose is $10, and so already the entertainment I've gotten for my $10 has been well spent. Because, I mean, we've actually got John contemplating doing something evil so he wins. And the potential of Roger screwing you both out of the prize. I'm totally getting $10 worth right now. This is awesome. and I'm also putting more cement I'm putting even more cement to cement my reputation as a complete jackass and asshole, too. But I can live with that as well. What the hell are we doing? Oh, yeah, I got to do what I've been playing. Not much, kind of like Glacinator. I played a little bit more Minecraft 1.6, but I can't find a donkey, and it's really pissing me off. I found a horse, but not a donkey. I also been playing more Worm Online, obviously, kind of like Glacinator with Animal Crossing. You know what my goal in that is now? My goal in Worm now is to make it a year. Like a year straight of playing at least like an hour or so every, because that's it.
How long do you have left to go then?
November.
Oh, wow.
I started pretty playing close. November 18th and it's July now. I mean, truthfully, as much as I talk about it here on the show, I don't play it that much. Like on most days I will go in and do the basic kind of stuff. Like a little farming, little this, little that, nothing too strenuous or major. And then sometimes on weekends, I'll spend a few hours in there working on a major project. Because I'm kind of finding that, you know, I never quite got Glaze the rhythm or the motivation to do big projects in Minecraft. You know how you did your cathedral and what the hell else did we do? The original railroad, you know. I never quite got that motivation for that in multiplayer Minecraft. I did it some in single player, but I've kind of got that in Worm. It's like I get this idea in my head for a big project, and then I'll do it, and then I don't play that much for like 3 weeks or 4 weeks, you know, an hour here, hour there. But the final thing I've been playing this week, I never did get back to Prey this week, and it's funny because Prey's a little linear for my taste. And it's painful saying that because I love Quake, Doom, Unreal Tournament. But I think open world games have spoiled me supremely. The more I played Prey, the more I felt like a rat in a maze. You know, you're just chasing the cheese from level to level to level. And that's really not anything against Prey or saying that Prey's a bad game because of that. It's just my playstyle and tastes have changed enough over the years that it doesn't capture me as well as it used to. I'll finish it. I mean, I'll find time to finish it, but it just is not, it's not the same enthralling stuff it once was. But what the last thing I've been playing is another MMO beta, and this one's called Firefall. Now, the interesting thing about Firefall is it's not universally loved by the MMO crowd that I know, which is kind of fascinating to me. It happens pretty often where I'm not too into an MMO that other people are just gaga about. Like right now, Final Fantasy, bunch of Roman numerals, 2.0 is going to be going live here, and people are just losing their shit over it, and I just have no interest in it. I've never been a huge fan of the Final Fantasy series, so Final Fantasy MMO doesn't do that much for me. But this Firefall, it's a FPS MMO. And what's interesting about it is there's really no overarching story. There's really no grinding. You're kind of led through a tutorial where you're shown things. And then from there, you kind of play almost like a giant game of Horde mode. You kind of hang out and shoot, you know, standard little enemies, or you work on your armor, your mech armor. You're not a full mech, but you're wearing a battle suit. In customizing that, upgrading parts, which is really easy and simple to do. And then the NPC enemy, I think they're called the Meld or something, attack like different points on the map, and you just kind of run to those points and you kill stuff. And that's how you get experience. And the great thing about it is if you see a massive group of players running in one direction, just follow them. You know, there's no need for a glowing yellow trail. There's no trying to figure out what this quest is. If you see a whole horde of players running in one direction, follow them. Because most likely they're doing some kind of mission that will help, that will benefit you and that you can help them. I think this game is going to change. It's been in beta and development for a long time. I think that's why a lot of the MMO heads aren't too super thrilled about it. Or just kind of meh about it. But I've been having fun with it. It's kind of that giving me the shooter fix. I'll go in there for like roughly the same length that we would play Battlefield or Halo on Xbox Live. You know, run around, shoot some stuff, try out the different battle suits. For the most part, I've stuck with the recon suit. But they have the Patman approved assault suit, which is basically like the assault class of Battlefield or COD. You know, and you just kind of futz around with that. And like I said, I play more than a couple hours and I get the same feeling like I did when I was just hardcore grinding on COD or Battlefield. It just kind of, I don't know, it just kind of loses its flavor, and it's much better in small doses, particularly small doses, which is obviously kind of an odd thing to say about MMOs, but as I've stated a thousand times, that it's entirely possible to do that with an MMO. And enjoy yourself, and this one especially. But it's set in space. It's kind of Halo Unreal Tournament looking kind of stuff. Nothing that you will not, you know, nothing that you're not familiar with. As the beta goes on, I'll see, you know, see if it's something I want to stick with or not. And that's a great thing about these MMOs. They're all free to play. You know, they hit open beta phase. Sometimes I get beta keys for others. You know, you play them for a while, and if they're no fun, you just wipe them off your hard drive and move on to the next one. So that's what we've been playing. Before we move to our main topic for this evening, which is a Can Man question, I'm trying to think how to phrase this properly. There are four or five people that listen to this show who are personal friends of mine, and from time to time they will send me messages or tell me in a text or phone call or something that they thought about the show. Most of the time, it's not stuff that I think is that interesting or that relevant to share. I've asked questions from codename Neighbor Fred a couple times and brought up stuff he's talked about. But there's one particular person that listens to the show that's an old teacher of mine from my college days, which is just mind-blowing and a little disturbing, to be quite honest, unless you knew this person. Now, most of the time, it's just when she messages me about the show, it's just stuff that wouldn't interest our audience for a minute, and for the most part is giving me crap, but constructive criticism style crap, and I actually really kind of enjoy it. I think it's, on one hand, the most ludicrous thing in the world that this particular person is listening to a show about video games when I sincerely doubt she's ever played one. But this week she sent me an email, and I was not the subject of her disapproval.
Oh, no.
This week. Now, Glacinator's already tensing up because I'm not going to read the email verbatim, but the gist of it was is that that young man... really, that young man, meaning our Glacinator, really needed to cut down on the F-bomb. And I pretty much had my head on my desk and was laughing my ass off at that email, because while Glacinator strung four or five of them together in a sentence, because he was irritated at the notion of spoilers, and he was correct. I said it last week, I'll say it again this week. If you go back and listen to episode 165, I had my normal 10 to 15 curse words in there, as per usual. So, being me, I sent an email back asking, okay, why are you picking on poor Daniel when, I don't think I called you that though, when I did my normal litany of cursing and general lack of good language. And her response was that essentially that there was still time to steer you in the right direction and that I was beyond all hope. So the irony of her pointing out your cursing versus my cursing only lasted for about 15 seconds, because apparently I am too far to the dark side and there's still time to save you.
not to toot my own horn or anything, but I usually think on the show I'm quite eloquent in what I am saying for the most part. It's just that in that certain circumstance, a harsher tone was required to deliver my point, I think.
Well, that's... This woman is an English professor, now retired. I had her for several English courses when I was in junior college. I'm not going to go into any more detail than that just because it's boring. But her and I multiple times had that debate when I was in junior college, because to me there's sometimes there's no word in the English in the polite English language that does the same justice or has the same power as fuck. And so, to me, what you said and the way you said it was completely appropriate, because that's how you felt. You know, there's times where there is no other word that will do. You know, I think to a bit Billy Connolly did in his stand-up comedy years ago, where it's just like he's talking about, you know, when somebody's really pissed you off, telling them "go away, shoo," doesn't work. You know, you tell them to fuck off, and off they fuck. I mean, that just so. This is kind of you've kind of been drawn into a running debate that I've had with her, and I've had it with several people, because while I probably tend to curse too much on this show, I don't see it as being a dumbing down of language or being somehow meaning you have a limited vocabulary. And you are. You are very eloquent, and both of you keep your language extremely clean. And it should be noted two things here, and it's the other reason I brought this up. Everything you hear in these episodes, minus dead air or something that one of the casts asks to be cut, usually because we've flubbed it up so bad, is completely what's on the raw tape. There is no me telling them to not cuss. There's no me telling Glacinator last week to cuss. You know, there's none of that Machiavellian. And believe me, I suspect that out there somewhere, there's somebody that probably thinks that happens. Not just with our podcast, but with all podcasts. You know, that it's very tightly controlled. It's network news-esque. I can't speak for any other podcast, but I can speak for this one and tell you that pretty much what you hear, minus some dead air and obvious flubs that aren't going to work, is pretty much what goes into the recorded show. Actually, let me ask you that real quick. Have you guys, either of you listening back to this show, heard anything that has been left in or taken out that you're like, why'd that happen? John?
Not that I can think of. I think it is a credit to our show that, you know, it does seem like there's so little editing that you have to do for us. So, you know, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, a lot of other podcasts, they have like segments, you know, where they'll talk about the news or whatever, or what they've been playing or whatever, and then like they cut and there's like this like music transition or something, and it's the next thing. I mean, ours, it's just straight beginning to end, you know. So like you said, there's no cuts, there's no really edits at all. It's just start, finish, you're done, you know?
See, and like when we were first doing this show, There was some talk, and a couple people had mentioned, you know, doing those whole segment things. And that's where kind of the, okay, now we're going to a discussion topic, now we're going to news kind of thing started. And as you'll notice here in 2013, I've been doing away with that because I don't like format. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first 100-some-odd shows were format and fairly standard formulaic. I don't like that. It feels very, fuck me, I forgot to take the phone out of here. Hold on. It's going to do it one more time. Come on, shut up. That's not going out of the show either. You'll find out.
Leave that in. It's really organic
because my dumb ass forgot to take out the landline phone. I got my other one on silent. Anyway, but I don't see the point. Why do what everybody else is doing? I mean, yeah, we're not drowning in listeners, but at the same time, the people that do listen want to be listening. And I'm much happier with an audience. I don't know, by the end of this show, Roger may not be listening anymore, especially if he loses the now contest he's in. But I'd personally much rather just leave it all in. I know there's been a couple times, John, and honestly, like there's been a couple times where John has said, you know, cut this out, especially if I'm like away from the microphone doing something else while they're talking, which I don't ever stray that far. But and then there's been a couple times where I've kind of done it for Glacinator because he seems, listening back to it, he seems really flustered and not sure what he wants to say. So cutting out some ums and la la la. But most 90% of the time, much like the phone you're going to hear ring or you heard ring, I just leave that shit in. But no, Glacinator, the bottom line is you should not be embarrassed. You should not be worried about somebody who's emailing me at my personal email address. Because I just found it really comical that apparently you're still savable and I'm not. Do you have a fan base? Huh?
Do you have a fan base? I'm like thinking about this now. I wonder how many people are out there listening to this. It's like, oh, that poor kid.
You know what?
Corrupted. Like, and that's why they keep listening. It's like every week they tune in to see how much worse it gets.
Pat and I have talked about that if we've ruined you. on a couple of occasions, we're like, have we made him a worse human being? And here's the set.
Go back and listen to the first episode I was on. It's almost cringeworthy.
Well, here's the most twisted part. There's no connotation on whether we feel bad about that or not. And if I had to hedge a bet, I'd say we're probably pretty proud of ourselves, if anything. Mm-hmm. Well, but that's the thing. I mean, yeah, when you first do these when you first were doing this podcast, you could tell you were nervous. I mean, there was no obvious flubs or anything, but I guess people just get it in their heads that this is a lot harder than it is, and it's so totally not. I mean, yeah, we've been doing it for 100 shows now, so it's really easy to say that. But
when you start a podcast, I mean, I found for myself, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed being able to talk about games and all that kind of great stuff. But I do find that the best shows we have are the ones that where we are the most relaxed, you know, and just, you know, going back and forth with talk and comments and. You know, in my early episodes, I found the structure helped to get into the podcasting, but the best shows are the ones where we're just bantering.
Well, that's my comedians call that riffing, and that's a term I prefer. I don't know why, but that's my favorite stuff too. Is the fact that you start with one topic and you don't know where it's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
If I thought we could get away with that every single week, just start talking about one topic, and then 90 minutes later we end up talking about onions, you know, I really wouldn't care what the top. Well, okay, there's probably a couple things I have to care about the topic being. I'm thinking, but Glacinator said something that is funny to me. I don't get nervous about doing this show, and unless I'm factually incorrect, which I'm sure I am a lot of times, and then, you know, either we cover it again and say we were, or we just pretend it never happened. I'm not too concerned about what people think about what I say, but when I see things like, there's a couple episodes just on archive.org alone that have several hundred or more downloads on them now, that terrifies me. Because I always come at this from the angle of, I have no idea why anybody would want to listen to what I have to say. I'm happy when they do, but I just don't. It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know. I've never been able to quite work out that way that is, but when I see the really high download number shows, and a lot of times there's shows that I don't think we did that much. It's the funniest part. It's like, there wasn't anything on. Like, I'll go back and look, especially if it's on WonderPotOnline.com, I'll go back and look and go look down through the list of shit we talked about. I'm like, damn, I don't think there's anything on that show that's worth a damn. What the hell are they listening to? But that's always been my thing, Glace. I'm happy that there's an audience there, but I don't think about it, because that's not why I do it. I do it because it's still fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a conversation, really. It's like we're all sitting down at a table somewhere, and if someone happens to be listening in, sure. But I mean, that's not my major first concern. I mean, it was when I first started out, but now it's like I don't even think about it.
Well, again, and I don't hate bringing him up, but I bring him up a lot because I find I have a lot of opinions in common with him. But Billy Connolly said something on a documentary about him I was watching that he said, you know, he felt he'd only have part of a career if he didn't get America to some extent. And for those of you that don't know, he's from Scotland. And he said that there's 250, there's more now, but he said there's 250 million people in that country. My audience is there somewhere. I've just got to go find it. And that's kind of always been my attitude about it. There's how many people in the world? Our audience is out there somewhere. We just got to find them, you know, for the particular brand of stupidity that we do. I've never been – I'm not certain what would happen if we ever got – oh, I think the show would be doomed if it ever got any real quote-unquote paying popularity. I can't
even imagine that. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Me neither. But the problem with that is there's been very few people I've noticed in the gaming business, in the gaming media business, that's been able to maintain the organic stuff they come from. You get too many people who want to tell you things you should and shouldn't do. And I don't do well with that. Ask Pat, because the cursing thing came up in the real early days of the show. It apparently had offended a few of our early audience members. I really didn't care. I mean, because I just didn't care. I mean, I felt bad that it was offending them to a certain extent, but it's like, well, then it's probably not the show for you. You know, it sucks that you're not going to listen anymore, and I'm sorry, but it's probably not the show for you. You should probably go, don't listen to Podtoid. You know, go listen to, it's dead now, but what the hell was that? 1UP or Joystick, whichever one's dead. What is it? Is it 1UP that's gone now?
1UP, yeah.
1UP had a couple that were very clean, very, very family-friendly podcasts that were good, but not my cup of tea. So there you go. Glacinator really didn't get chastised. If anything, truth be told, the tone of the email was, why am I doing this to him?
No, for whoever you are, I did that totally on my own accord. No one forced me to do anything. So.
Oh, and he was pissed, too, because the only time I've seen him that, like, upset, I shouldn't say pissed, because I'm the only one that gets pissed. These two just get upset for, like, a moment. And then it's done. But the only time I've seen him that overtly passionate and upset about something is when I'm jerking his chain about DLC. Because we've done, if you go back, we've done a couple episodes where I'm really laying on the devil's advocate on DLC because I know how much he hates it. And I am so ambivalent to DLC, which is not the proper attitude to have either. Don't get me wrong. But I can hear him. But the thing is my intention is to never make either of you mad. I think I pissed Pat off once with something about Twitter long ago. But at the same time, too, sometimes when you get into something that's really passionate, it's so hard not to play devil's advocate and just watch somebody spin around them a few times. And Glacinator's not entirely wrong about DLC. That I think, is what makes it even more entertaining, is the fact that once these mics turn off, I don't necessarily disagree with a lot of his points about DLC. This is a radio show, after all. It's not like, you know, there isn't a little bit of acting, maybe. Oops. We might have given away too much with that one. To save ourselves, we'll move on, because I think the only
characterization is a better term.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Don't break kayfabe.
Accentuating certain qualities.
Don't break kayfabe now.
Right, exactly. It is a little bit of kayfabe, but the thing I don't ever want it to become, and especially with me, is persona. Mm-hmm. Because that's when it becomes a problem. Because I'm pretty certain that as much as I hate the douche, I'm pretty certain Cliffy B isn't like that. Like if you met him face-to-face at a bar and nobody else was around. He's a bad example. Okay, let me think of a better example. You know, but guys like that, you know, I mean, guys like Cliffy B and the dude from that made Psychonauts. Oh shit, Schaefer. Schaefer, and the guy that David Jaffe. Schaefer and Jaffe are probably better examples of personas than Cliffy, because I have this terrifying feeling Cliffy's may not be a persona after all these years. I think it may just be him. You know, that kind of wanders into persona territory, I think, sometimes, and I don't want to go that over the top. It's too much work. But on with the actual show. I'm sure some people are just going, what the fuck are they talking about now?
This is the meta episode.
Yeah, no, which is totally fine with me, but we're about to blow it out of the meta realm, because this question we got, or this thing we got coming up next, I didn't know a damn thing about until the Can Man's question hit my email inbox. I had no idea. Because paying attention to video game news has really been down the list of top priorities lately. So we do have a Can Man question. It was entirely too hot for him to record in his van this week. Hot in Calgary, Canada. Uh-huh. Come live down here for a couple months. Although those panel vans do get extremely warm, I have no doubt. So he does have a question for the crew this week. So take it away, man in the can.
What is going on, people? The Can Man is back. Another day out of the van and another day in the can. So, Nintendo is teasing, and I do emphasize the word teasing, the possibility of a new IP, a new intellectual property coming out on the Wii U. It was Miyamoto himself. Now, this is a Japanese magazine being translated, and I remember back in the GameCube days, very, very often, things get lost in translation. However, from what the West can get out of it, Miyamoto said that he was working on a new IP for the Wii U. This has got fanboys excited. They're jacking off to Mario, whatever they do. I think maybe we should step back and be a little more cautious. I would love for there to be a new IP from Nintendo. I mean, come on. Some people say, oh, but Nintendo Land was new. Nintendo Land was new. But it used old mini-games from old franchises. It was nothing but a mini-game collection. It was good. It wasn't great. But it had Zelda levels. It had Mario levels. It had Metroid levels. Whatever, right? So that wasn't a new IP. And it got me thinking, when's the last time a real new IP showed up? It's been like GameCube days, really. I think we could argue, I would say that Wii Sports and Wii Sports 2 or Resort, that was, I guess, a new franchise, but that franchise is dead. I don't see them doing motion controls on the Wii U, so they've dropped that IP. Dropped it like a log in the can, that is. So, what does Pac-Man in the can want out of a new IP? I'm not going to get excited, but if I could pick one, what would you pick? Some people on the internet are saying, how about a shooter from Nintendo? Really? Come on, they're not going to get anything like that. How about some adult, and I don't mean X-rated, but mature content? We're probably not going to get that either. But what would we get? Well, let's look at Nintendo's strengths. Nintendo makes great platform games. Nintendo makes great adventure games. Zelda is a great example of that. They make good, although it's Retro Studios doing it, but they created the Metroid series. So they've got sci-fi, they've got action, they've got platforming, they got all those covered. And to be perfectly honest, I hope they don't stray too far from what they're good at. An all-new side-scrolling action game would be cool. Or how about a science fiction adventure game? They could take what they know about the Zelda action-adventure genre and apply it into science fiction. So they could do what they're good at, but make a new intellectual property, make new characters, make a new universe. So I'm hoping that's the direction they're going in. I'm hoping that they're going to make something, even a new platform game. Sure, Super Mario and Donkey Kong and Kirby, there's a ton of platform games. But remember on the Nintendo 64, when Banjo and Kazooie were introduced? I remember that being a gameplay experience similar to Super Mario 64. But I loved it, and so did a ton of people. So, I guess what I'm trying to say is Nintendo hopefully stays with what they're good at, but makes something new out of it. I'd love to see a space science fiction game that plays like an adventure game like Zelda, with all sorts of puzzles, and, you know, instead of going across Hyrule Field, I can't speak in the can, have him going across the universe. You know, that'd be interesting. But once again, I really think people should maybe downtone their excitement. because chances are it'll be some sort of weird little mini game thing, and it will disappoint us all. But still, it's nice to know that Miyamoto has mentioned a new IP. They've made some amazing games in the past. They can make a new amazing game in the present. They need to get off their lazy butts and do it. So anyways, my question to the Wonder Pod crew, Patman in the can, is now that it seems very likely that Nintendo is making a new intellectual property, what do you guys want to see? And what do you expect to see? Like I said, I don't expect much out of this at all, but I would like to see some sort of sci-fi version of a Zelda game. But what would you guys like to see? What would Bruce, what would Glacinator, and what would Mr. John Kind want to see out of a new Nintendo IP on the Wii U? And what do you think we're actually going to get? Because I think that's two different things. I don't think we're going to get something epic, but you never know. Anyways, the can man has got to get off the can and do whatever the can man does. So, until next time, guys, I will see you all on the flip side. Can Man is out. Woo!
All right, Can Man. So yeah, it is very exciting that Miyamoto kind of let us slip that he was working on a new IP. You know, it makes Mario Kart the release of that game come. You know, it makes me anticipate that so much more because that's kind of what he said. He's gonna have a new IP after Mario Kart 8 in the new year. So to answer your question though, what kind of game do I want Nintendo to make? Well, it's hard for me to really nail down something specific because they are so adept at making games. You know, their kind of stamp on a genre. You know, like how Pikmin is their stamp on real time strategy. In a way, you know, that kind of thing. So what I want to see, not so much from a genre, but what I want this new IP, this new game to be, is finally the validation of the Wii U gamepad and integrating it into gameplay and giving me that reason why this thing exists, why it, you know, the... what's the buzzword they used to use? They used briefly that was really weird. Isometric gameplay. Isometric.
I think that's it.
Yeah, isometric or asynchronous. I'm sorry, that's it. Asynchronous game. Asynchronous gameplay where one person is looking at this. You can look at the gamepad and at the screen and do your inputs there while things are going on the TV. And you kind of go back and forth. I want to see that happen in a fresh way that says, here's the reason why you want a Wii U. We have all these franchises that are doing these things, but here's what's new. Here's the hotness. Here's the thing that is revolutionary for games and the reason why you want to buy that system. Because, you know, I'm a fan of Mario Kart. I'm a fan of Pikmin and all that, all those franchises, but... You know, a lot of the stuff from the E3 press conference was not. You know, I mean, my as I mentioned before, my comment on Facebook was that it's, you know, I wanted fresh and new, but I got probably, you know, some of the best games of this generation. it's kind of a weird thing, you know, to be disappointed in games that are going to be really good. But I'm hoping this one will be fresh. I really can't say what it'll be, because who knows with Miyamoto? Because the man is a genius. So I just want fresh, something that makes me think about games in a new way. And maybe that's a high expectation. But if anyone's gonna do it, it'll be Nintendo. What do you think, Glace?
Well, I've always said on the show how much I enjoy 3D platformers. And I've said it again multiple times how there aren't really any that exist right now. The last major ones I can think of that came out would probably be Alice Madness Returns and probably New Super Mario 3D Land. And I know they're coming out with the Wii version of that, but even that is derivative of, you know, Mario 3D Land. So I think it'd be interesting to see a new 3D platformer using asynchronous gameplay, like what you said, with the Wii U or on the 3DS as well. I mean, there's so many different, you know, opportunities that Nintendo has to make a new experience on their new systems, because they're very original in terms of the properties that they have, but they're not really utilizing the, you know, the capabilities that each system has. I mean, Animal Crossing has 3D, but I mean, I guess Animal Crossing is a bad example because you don't really need to have 3D for it. But there's not really many games that are utilizing that 3D aspect besides, you know, just to like have stuff pop out, you know. And I think it'd be interesting to see some sort of game that incorporates that 3D into a 3D platformer as well, besides just having it easier to look around. But I mean, I'm sure whatever Miyamoto will put out will be awesome if it's not Wii Music 2. So. Just if it's a 3D platformer, I'll be happy and I'll buy it nevertheless, just because that excites me.
I was in the can. Did you guys just do what you wanted them?
Yes.
Okay.
No. So far, it's just what we hope that they will.
Yeah, we'll
put out. Yeah.
Yeah, that's basically what I meant by what you want them to do. Okay.
You're right. You're right. Sorry.
Because I was in the can while they were doing that. Can man. As for me, here's what I want. I want a new character. I don't care what the IP is based around. 3D platformer, like Glacinator said, it's fine, even though I suck at them. I want a new character to add to the Nintendo Pantheon. And what I'm about to say next, especially to a certain Shower Legend, is probably going to be heresy, but it's been so long since a new character, a new compelling or at least iconic, but potentially iconic character has been added to the Nintendo universe. And I know that Miyamoto and the whole entire team at Nintendo has it in them. I mean, they have given us Mario, they've given us Luigi, Donkey Kong, Wario, Princess Peach, that bitch. Who am I missing here? Yoshi,
Samus,
the Pikmin. You know, and I mean, I'm just talking first party stuff, and I'm still missing a few. You know, so that's what I want to see them do. You want to sell the system. Then sell the system, you know, the Wii U system, like John was talking about. Sell it with something new. But the marketing, you know, and I'm sure there's people listening to this going, no, that's not how you sell systems. The Wii U is in too big of trouble. Nintendo knows how to market. They know how to market because they have so many iconic characters that people just run out and buy every year like Madden. For multiple systems. So you have the tools at your disposal to make a brand new IP, whatever configuration. We'll just go with 3D platformer because that seems to make Glacinator so happy. But with a new character, something new that takes its place besides all those ones I just mentioned. That's what I wanted to see him do. And I know Miyamoto's got it in him. You know, I mean, the truth be told, they're going to have to do something because their chance to catch up after the Xbox One and PS4 are out, it's going to be a pretty small window, I'm thinking. But we'll see, because as far as I'm concerned, the Xbox One and the PS4 don't have much of a lineup. Period. Fuck launch. I'm not seeing anything on the horizon that's making me go, ooh, I need to buy a console. So for the second part of the question, what game do you actually think they're going to make? Glace, why don't you tackle that first?
Oh, gosh. Before I knew Miyamoto was the one that was behind this announcement, I was going to have a lot more pessimistic answer. But now that I know it's Miyamoto, I mean, I'm a lot more hopeful. I mean, he's put out some great games. I am worried that it will keep continuing to cater, whatever the game is, it will continue to cater towards more of a casual audience than a, not necessarily a hardcore, but a more intensive playing audience. And I mean, I've felt that way for the past 5 years with each new installment of Mario. I mean, they've been fun, but they've been increasingly easier for the most part. And I mean, that's great that more people are able to play and enjoy it, but I haven't really been challenged Nintendo-wise in a while. So, I mean, they could put out, it could be a new 3D platform, but it could be totally, you know, washed down for accessibility. And I think it's extremely possible that that may happen. And if that does happen, then I'll be not interested. So that's my worst case scenario, I think.
Yeah, oh boy. You got a lot of valid points that also point to why Nintendo's got major issues in general. John, what are your thoughts on what you think they'll actually do?
Well, whatever it is, I think there's the possibility that they'll go for something that's safe. I mean, what's come out for Wii U and so far, and again, I'm making the assumption now that this is a Wii U title that's coming. The Wii U has been very safe in what they've been releasing, you know, and what they've shown to be coming out. So, you know, again, back to Mario Kart. Yeah, there's some stuff in there about flipping the things upside down and whatnot, but there doesn't seem to be a very big change to the franchise. You know what I mean? The Donkey Kong Country sequel that's coming out looks a lot like the one that they just had on Wii and just on 3DS, actually, the remake of the Wii version. You know, these are things like they're making things that they know are going to turn some sort of a profit without going too far out in left field. I don't want, like, I think they're probably going to go that way. So what's the answer? I mean, really, they've put a lot of 2D platformers for various Nintendo systems lately. I don't want another 2D platformer this year or next year as this new game. I want something fresh. You know, safe is not where I want the Wii U to go, because it has to make it has to bring attention to itself. Here's the new thing. Like, the only new gameplay that I saw at E3 for them really was that wonderful 101 game, which seems to be sort of a combination of Pikmin and Beautiful Joe in a way. Just the way it looks and the way it feels. My fear is that they're going to play it safe and have something completely unmemorable. But I really want something that's, as I already mentioned, you know, something new, something that turns, you know, I expect Nintendo to turn gaming on its head at times, and I hope that that's what this new one will do.
Well, the reason I was sputtering there is because I have a question that probably, once again, is heresy that will round out this question or this debate with here in a sec. But I'm with John. I suppose I'm with Glaz too. I'm terrified they're going to play it safe. And unfortunately, I don't think safe sells consoles. Not this time around. And I don't think that they have enough trust. Again, we're talking about this again, in their audience to put something out there that's new and different. Like I was talking about, you know, some new character, some new totally different scheme that is, you know, intrinsically linked to the Wii U and should really also appear on the 3DS, like a lot of the Mario and Zelda and Donkey Kongs do. And I think that may give us some insight into the long-term future of Nintendo, because while I have yet to be ready to cry the sky is falling and Nintendo's going to be bankrupt, blah, 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 like a lot of clowns already are, ones who are supposed to know better than I do and don't, I'm leery. I'm wondering if maybe Miyamoto's getting a little bit past his prime at this gig, you know. It really concerned me, his comments about mobile games and mobile platforms and apps. It as much as I know this probably really bothers hardcore Nintendo fanboys, I walked away with the feeling of somebody that just doesn't get it anymore, and that maybe time has moved past.
Hmm.
And that leads me to my question of, let's set aside Metroid, because that is kind of a different equation. But is things like Donkey Kong and Super Mario Brothers and Mario Kart, have they ever really been hardcore? As it's defined by the internet hive mind these days. Because that's kind of always been Nintendo's thing. Yeah, they grabbed the casual audience last time, and now Microsoft's trying to do it. That's painfully obvious. But one thing about Nintendo, and one thing that kind of made me chuckle with the reaction to the Wii, is their consoles have always kind of been for kids to a certain extent. What do you think about that, Glaze?
I mean, while they may have okay, it's going to go back to me complaining about difficulty, I guess. And I guess I'm a little pissy about that all the time. But while they may have been directed towards kids, you know, it's Donkey Kong, it's a monkey that has a tie, you know, and it's a, or it's Star Fox, you know, it's a fox that shoots lasers and a plane, you know, those are kid ideas, you know, they're cartoony, they're comical, but they weren't easy. Like, Donkey Kong Country is not an easy game, really, for the most part. Metroid, we're not doing Metroid, okay.
See, that one's you have to set that aside, because Prime and some of the other Metroids, yeah, that throws that right out.
Yeah, Star Fox 64, some of those levels weren't easy. What's another Nintendo franchise? I mean, I'm just saying, like, in past games, it's, while it is kid-oriented, it's difficult to do. Super Mario Land is not easy, you know?
F-Zero.
F-Zero is totally not easy. And I really don't think it's because I've gotten older that they're easier now. I mean, you can go back and you look at these games. I mean, like, this is a Nintendo, but the main post on Reddit today was on the front page. It was of our gaming. It was, how the heck did I beat this game when I was a kid? And it was a picture of Crash Bandicoot. That game isn't easy either, you know? And I think Nintendo has a real problem with trying to, by appealing to everyone, they're appealing to no one. Sort of talking about Superman last week, you know? If you try to please the people that don't know how to play games and the people that know how to play games, you're just going to end up pissing both of them off. So they really need to find some sort of, not middle ground, but they just need to choose a position. And I'd rather it be the not easy position, even though that may alienate a fan base.
See, my problem is I'll let you chime in here in a second, John. I don't recall anything. No, let me put this another way. None of us as 6 or 7 year olds could beat Demon Souls or Dark Souls. So, whether difficulty over time has gotten even more difficult, whether it was era. See, what I'm thinking is let me rephrase again. What is causing my line of thinking is the whole argument in the Star Wars community about the three original Star Wars were so great is because we were all kids. A lot of us. Clay Snyder wasn't even born yet. But And kids, young children, really enjoyed the three prequels that a lot of older nerds universally hate. For the record, I am not one of those with the last one. The first two, yes. So I wonder if the kid nostalgia glasses is you know, why we, you know, part of the thing here with Nintendo. Maybe they are more difficult than I give them credit, but I think there's something to this kid nostalgia thing, but you bring up a good point, Gleis. There were games that were difficult, leaving out Metroid.
I mean, even current generation. I mean, wouldn't you say that Wind Waker is harder than Skyward Sword? Wouldn't you say that Mario Sunshine is harder than Mario Galaxy? It's a fact that games have gotten easier Nintendo related.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's any game related. I don't think it's Nintendo.
Well, let's get John to chime in, because you've also made the claim or made the statement that you like difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
I may be biased in this.
Well, no, yeah, but Glacinator seems to like to torture himself. I am totally out of that argument because I don't. So let's get John's opinion. Were they tougher back then? Are they easier now, Nintendo wise, or what's the deal here? You know, are they sticking with the kid focus, all that stuff?
Well, I will say that Nintendo always had a knack for a really good learning curve, so that every Nintendo franchise is not a mature rated title. I mean, Metroid or not. I mean, Metroid has some mature stuff going on in it, maybe, but none of them are mature rated. There's no blood, there's no gore, there's no sex. It's you know, characters, it's adventure, you know, very simplistic. And that makes them very family oriented. But back in the day, those games I think were tougher, but Nintendo always had a knack for giving you a game that had a really good learning curve and developing your skills over the course of the game to get to the end, and you know, the ends were difficult, but you had learned the skills to beat them. Today, I think what's going on is that, you know, that difficulty level tops out perhaps a little bit lower. It's not as, you know, the curve from beginning to end is not as steep. The slope is not as steep as it was perhaps back in the day. And that's because I think in today's world, people want you to finish their games. They want you to get in and get to the end, play it for, you know, long amounts of time. I mean, people talk about how people toss in multiplayer add-ons and when they're not needed. That's because they want you to play that game longer than just the single-player campaign, you know. But they're also making the single-player campaign, you know, and I'm talking in general with game companies now, you know, an ending is reachable. And the best games are the ones, and because Nintendo is a company that people have such great nostalgic feel for, I can say, I finished Mario Brothers 3, I got to the end. Because by the end of Mario Brothers 3, you are a good goddamn Mario Brothers 3 player. You have the skills to beat all those tanks in a row before you get to the final boss, and that's why you can beat it. You know, it's all about gameplay and bringing the player to the end. I think Nintendo has kind of scaled, again, that slope is not as steep. The ending is not as far away, or it doesn't require you to build up as many skills as you need to get to the end. But I think, because I think what you said there is true about Skyward Sword. That game was not as, there were, you know, the places where it was hard, unfortunately, I found were cheaper. Not that they were difficult, they were cheaper things and fetch quests and these kinds of things to give you more content before you got to the end. So in some ways, you know, like, it's good that players are able to get to the end, but I don't want that, like, the cheap things to get in your way, like fetch quests to give you more hours of content. You know, that stuff is crappy. I don't want to see that. I want to be brought along and learn these gaming skills within the game that I feel that I'm inside it and becoming a better player for it. Do you know what I mean?
Well, and I think there's something to be said, and this.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. This doesn't sit well with people like Glacinator who want the ultimate challenge. I think people in general don't want to be frustrated. I think the dumbing down just isn't just Nintendo. I think that's why you're seeing things like Dark Souls and Demon's Souls, and now Dark Souls 2, finding such a niche, or man, it's more niche, audience.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, because as humanity doesn't want to be as challenged as much anymore. I think that's one of the dirty little secrets, is that we're just getting lazier. It's just like the same thing of people, a lot of people say, oh, I want change, I want a new IP out of one side of their mouth, and then they don't give them a chance out of their other. You know, it's, oh, it's shit. Why didn't you make this?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
The people who like those games are people, like me, like I say that I like Super Meat Boy. And that's because I don't mind being tossed into the deep end right away, so and figure out how to make that game work. The Dark Souls, you know, is like you say, another good example of that. There are people out there who like being a challenged right away, but
keep going.
Go ahead.
My bad.
No, I was pretty well done. Go ahead.
Okay, I was just gonna say, just to clarify, Bruce, I don't necessarily want the ultimate challenge. I just want a challenge. I mean, because you saw how much I overreacted during our Minecraft escapade of death.
That was just so cheap.
See, I don't take really, really difficult things very well. I like to have to think about things and go through it and then do it because I feel accomplished. But I don't want to have to keep dying over and over again to complete something.
Well, part of the problem there was I was having a hard time coming up with a word that didn't make you sound like one of those dude bros that plays on, like, you know, insanity mode first, thinking it's going to make them cool somehow. But at the same time, you know, not saying you were just playing on medium. So I was having a hard time coming up with a word or a phrase that would cover that. Because, yeah, I mean, it depends on the game for me. It really does. I don't... There's some games I just want to see the story, and I make no bones about that, you know, so I'll play it on easy. If normal gets on my nerves, I'll play it on easy, just to see the story. That's what I did with I played Bioshock Infinite on normal, 3, as close as you can get to full all the way through, as humanly possible for me. But yeah, I mean, but that's... It's interesting because what do you think, Glaze? Do you think gamers overall or humanity overall is not wanting to be challenged as much these days? Is maybe the dumbing down of it because the audience isn't?
I'm not sure if it's not necessarily being challenged. It's just, I think we have shorter attention spans.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that's a good way to put it.
I mean,
yeah,
because that's the major thing with mobile gaming, you know, and Farmville and all this stuff. You know, you just want to play for 5 minutes. Be happy that you did something, and then you're done. And you come back an hour later, play for 5 minutes, you're done. You know, people don't like marathon gaming anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's quick spurts. It's sprints.
But they also want that sense of accomplishment with those short spurts. I mean, they want to have achieved something. I think that's the appeal of achievements, that you've, you know, in a 20-minute time span, you've accomplished some goal, and you got some validation of that.
Oh yeah, you could do a whole show on validation of accomplishment. And it's kind of funny because at first I did some achievement hunting, and now I'm starting to remember that the reason I played video games in the first place, the sense of accomplishment from playing video games, was finishing. And that was all that needed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm much happier with that these days than I am worried about every last achievement.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point, like I was saying earlier, I think people are designing games to make it more achievable for you to finish it. They want you to get to the end.
Well, and it's kind of like I was talking about what I've been playing with Prey felt too much like a rat in the maze, whereas Worm Online, it pretty much, as I've stated a couple times, and I've never fully been able to get the thought out of my head. Worm Online and Minecraft ask you, what do you want to do today? I like that freedom. I like being able to go, look at something, think about it, design it, build it, play with it. You know, I want far more freedom in my games You know, and that's where I agree with Glacinator about challenge. I want one more than one solution to the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you guys, I saw, I think, the guy that runs LFT Minecraft server and you two were talking about antechamber, and I'm just like, oh, God, puzzle game? No. Because it's pretty much a one-solution deal, and it's like, no. Make me a puzzle game where there's, like, five different ways to solve it, or if you're super clever, to break it. You know, I mean, even though overall I did not like the game, I did feel a sense of accomplishment for dragging my carcass through 80 hours of Dragon Age Origins. Sense of insanity as well, but because then I turned around 6 months later and did it again. that was a fanboy moment. The more I reflect back on that, that was a fanboy moment because I just couldn't believe BioWare made something I didn't like. After all these years. So there you go, Man in a Can. Your question kind of got up. No, I'm not doing it. Your question kind of carried on. But the good news is, unlike the Saturday morning TV show thing, we did both parts of the question. Hopefully yeah. We answered them correctly. Trust me, we will find out if we did not do it right.
I think we did well.
And yeah, I do. I think that's the best Van Ranter Can Man question we've done yet. So he'll just have to find something more confusing and difficult for us to do. I shouldn't give him any ideas. It's never a good idea on my part. It'll be a 64-part question next week asking us for DNA samples or something.
It's questionable if you should encourage the Can Van Man.
I of all people should know better as well. that's the saddest thing about it is anybody in our crew and audience should know better than to give him ideas. To close out the show tonight, a couple. Well, it's kind of silly to call one a sad note, but it is a kind of a moment in my gaming history. PC World, and I didn't look at the date, and I'm not going to dig through the history of my web browser. PC World's going to be closing down its print edition. I'm not sure when the last issue is going to be released, but I was slightly, very slightly melancholy about that. PC World was a magazine that I read really religiously when it first started in the 90s. I think it started in 92, 93, somewhere around in there. If you know, when Glacinator was born, and all throughout the 90s and into the early part of the noughties, I was pretty rabid reader of it. I kind of went away from it, finally let my subscription run out, but that kind of came at the same time as when I stopped building PCs for myself and got even lazier again, back to the lazy thing, and just started buying PCs instead. The other thing, and it's rare that we do this, we were talking about it before the show, but I felt compelled to do it tonight. Ryan Davis, the Giant Bomb co-founder, along with Jeff Gertzman, they both used to work at GameSpot during that whole debacle, passed away this week suddenly at the age of 34, and we here at WonderPod would like to send our condolences to his wife and family. I followed him on Twitter. I think it was at Tazwell. I told these guys before the show, part of the reason I wanted to send out condolences is because I liked reading or following Ryan on Twitter. He's one of those people, kind of like Ben Kuchera, that both got me thinking and pissed me off on a lot of occasions. And as silly as it may seem, those kinds of people are the kinds of people I like. Anybody that makes me think, gives me a different point of view or take, even if I don't agree with it, and especially if it's well thought out and something that they've put some thought and you know, reasoning behind. And he definitely did that, and I'm sure to the Giant Bomb family and his family and wife, he will be missed, and so we send our condolences to him. To them. Not to him. I have to stop there because me and dead people. I had somebody ask me one time what I would thought if somebody showed up to my funeral and just literally basically got up there and said what a horrible human being I was. and they really were expecting a different reaction than I gave them. But my standard reaction, and it will be, so all you haters out there, feel free. I don't care. I'm dead. It's over. What do I care? That's probably going to give the Van Man more ideas. That's all I needed. So, on that note, this is... I'll give you a few ways you can get in touch with us, and we'll get out of here. Oh, shit. The first best way is Facebook. We have a Facebook. It's WonderPod Online. All one word. Shoot us a friend request. If you're not a bot, we'll accept it. We have a website. As I've said for the last few weeks, it's kind of become a mausoleum, but the podcast gets posted there. The website is WonderPodOnline.com, all one word. The reason that it's good the podcast gets posted there is there's an embedded player. So if you want to download shit, you can listen right on the site. As if you want MP3s and all that kind of stuff, we have two ways you can get that. One is iTunes. We're in the store now, as far as I know. I haven't checked lately, but just search WonderPod. It's there. If you don't like iTunes, which we know if some people don't, we have it at archive.org. All this stuff's also linked in the show post if you want. What else? We have YouTube channels. WonderPod Online YouTube channel, 36Wii YouTube channel. Glaciator's got one with some stuff. Our buddy Chris Lloyd, who we need to get back on the show, has his Fanish YouTube channel. We have a Twitter. It's at WonderPod Online, all one word. And if none of that works for you, we have an email address. It's WonderPodOnline@gmail.com, WonderPodOnline@gmail.com. Or you can follow me on Twitter and listen to me get jerked around by Canadians, or watch me get jerked around by Canadians at ORIGIM. You can follow John on Twitter.
If you want to see me do the jerking, it's at JONKUKHOE.
Oh, and Glacinator's too busy hanging out at Walden Pond to care. Until episode 167, I am Bruce McGee. I can't top jerking. I'm out of here, people. See ya.
I'm off to do some Steam sale shopping. See ya.
I'm off to wait for my, my Virtual Boy helmet to finally arrive in the store. I'm just sitting here in Animal Crossing mode, just like out the window, just staring longingly into the store.
Yes, I've caused neuroses as well.